And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. With you till 3 on this Monday as we kickstart another week with plenty to get to over the next few hours. Coming up, the Warriors, even the NBA Finals with Game 5 coming up tonight. Plus, the Hornets have their new coach. And all the teams hiring this offseason have something in common. Paul Feinbaum continues to go after Clemson. We'll get to that coming up. And a whole lot going on. We got a Stanley Cup matchup. We got upsets in the College Baseball World Series. We have more bad news for Deshaun Watson. And with everything going on over the weekend, we also have a movie to review. And we'll do that later on. The latest sports movie, Hustle, Adam Sandler's basketball film. We'll break that down throughout the afternoon. I took more notes during those basketball scenes than Game 4 of the NBA Finals. And we'll talk about some movies and Major League Baseball as Adnan Burke scheduled to join us an hour from now from MLB Network. The Atlanta Braves push their winning streak to double digits and beyond. Longest winning streak in over a decade as they get back to playing good baseball. We'll talk about it all and more over the next few hours with you till 3 on this Monday. You can join the conversation throughout the afternoon. 843-721-9500 to give us a call. You can always text the show. 843-608-1734. Get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays. On Facebook at ESPN Radio Charleston. Via email, studio@kirkmanbroadcasting.com. Or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Head over there and click on our show page where you can leave a comment for the show. You can find the latest versions of the show podcasted right there, or you can even take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go. Just simply stream us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. With you till 3, Trent's on the steel wheels. Trent, what's going on? How are you?
Luke, I am doing absolutely phenomenal. Beautiful weekend here in the Low Country. What a great Game 4 we had on Friday. Played some golf yesterday. Didn't go the way I wanted it to, but it was still nice to be out fun in the sun. It's beautiful out, Luke. I'm doing well on this Monday. Glad to be here with you, sir, getting ready for Game 5.
Did you play yesterday?
I did play yesterday,
ooh.
Yeah.
It was a hot day out there.
It was incredibly hot, and I decided to wear pants because I didn't have the correct shorts, and, you know, I don't like looking like a scrub out there on the course. You know, I like to look presentable, and I was wearing pants, and, yeah, I sweat through everything I was wearing. There's no doubt about it.
Did you go – what time did you get out there?
We teed off at 5 p.m., so,
okay.
Like, it was kind of going down, yeah. But there was zero shade out at the lovely golf course, that being Stono Ferry. It was no shade whatsoever. I was very hot.
Well, obviously, we have some new openings have opened up on the PGA Tour.
Yes.
We got a new tour now, the Live Golf Tour, so we're working on it. Trent's working to get there.
Tomorrow Midday Show, I'll have you'll be my only sponsor out at these Live Golf events. Yeah. It'll be great.
I'll come be your caddy. I'll be like the guy in Happy Gilmore.
There we go.
The homeless guy that he picks up. That'll be me out there. Hey, let me start with this. We had Game 4 of the NBA Finals, and what a game it was. Best game of the finals, one of the best games of the postseason. Now, it was Friday night, so it may be hard to think back to, and we already get ready for Game 5 coming up tonight. But we have to spend a few moments talking about how good Steph Curry was. That was the defining moment, or a defining moment, for Steph Curry in his career and in these NBA Finals. Now, the narrative going in has kind of been that Curry, right, still needs to prove himself a little bit. Has never won a Finals MVP, had Kevin Durant with him when he won the majority of his Finals. And I think, regardless of what happens the rest of this series, when you saw what you did Friday night, I think that was enough to prove the point that Steph Curry is one of the all-time greats, can win and play just fine on his own in the big spots, and could put a team on his back. He went for 43 on the road with the team trailing in the series. For all intents and purposes, that was the biggest game of the year. That was the season on the line. If they lose that one, they fall down 3-1. And it's less realistic that the Warriors have a chance to come back. When you win Game 4, as they did Friday, now you head home, tied at 2. Suddenly, the Warriors are favored once again in this series in the eyes of Vegas. They were a pretty big underdog going into Game 4. And we talked about it here on the show on Friday, that when the Warriors would win tonight, meaning Game 4, as they did, right, everybody's going to flip-flop. Everybody thought this series was already over. The Celtics had it in the bag. Now Golden State wins Game 4. And they head back to Golden State in what becomes a three-game series, and the Warriors will be home for two of the three. No surprise now that the Warriors are favored. We'll get to Game 5 in just a moment. But first, on Game 4 with Steph Curry. On the road, essentially, series on the line. A little bit of a banged-up ankle from the game prior. Trailing at halftime. Not getting much help from his supporting cast throughout the series. And Curry went out there and was magnificent. 43 points. 7 three-pointers, even had 10 rebounds. Hit huge shots in the fourth quarter. He was great. And if you still have to question Steph Curry, can he get it done on his own? Can he play big in the big spots? Can he put his team on the back? Can they win a game in the end of the fourth quarter? He answered all those questions Friday night. Now, when you go back and you look at Curry's finals, his NBA finals over his career, right? In 2015, he was second on the team in scoring. And in 2016, he was third on the team in scoring, in the NBA Finals, that is. Right? 2017, he was fourth in scoring in the series. 2018, third in scoring. But you look at his last two NBA Finals. 2019, when they lost to the Raptors, and everybody got hurt, and the Warriors had not much left, Curry led all scorers with 31 points in that series. Now, they did lose in six games because, again, right, Durant, Klay Thompson, they get hurt. They had nothing to compete with Toronto. But he averaged 31 points leading all scorers. And so far this year, in this NBA Finals, he's averaging 34 points leading all scorers. Next closest is Jaylen Brown, averaging 22. Next closest on Curry's team is averaging half of what he is. He's scoring twice as many points as anybody else on his own team. This has been a dominant run. And regardless what the Warriors do the rest of the way, even if they lose the next two games, assuming Curry doesn't completely disappear and score 10 points tonight, we've seen enough to acknowledge, yeah, Curry is an all-time great, is an incredible shooter, doesn't need a Kevin Durant to be successful individually, and can play big in the big spots. He was phenomenal on Friday night. I don't think, in a world where we're very hyperbolic, it is too hyperbolic to say that was one of the better performances we've seen in the NBA Finals over the years. In fact, it was the third most points scored in an NBA Finals win since MJ retired almost 25 years ago. Curry joins one of about 15 players to score over 42 points in a finals game all time. And when you go back and you look specifically, try to find a situation like that. A team on the road in Game 4 beyond of the NBA Finals, and their star goes for over 40 points in a win, there's not many who have done that, who have gone for over 40 on the road in an NBA Finals game in the second half of the series, when the games become even more crucial and important. Curry was fantastic on Friday night. He's shooting almost 50% from beyond the arc in this series. He's averaging 35 points a game in this series. And he also got some help Friday night as well, from Klay Thompson hitting down some big threes. Jordan Poole had a couple of good shots. And Andrew Wiggins was fantastic, and that helped as well. We are all over it on the show Friday. Told you the Warriors would win. Saying they need more help from that supporting cast. Draymond Green should be benched. He was at the end of the fourth quarter. Steve Kerr made some good adjustments. Other guys stepped up. The Warriors played well, and they even the series, led by Steph Curry, who was fantastic. Here is J.J. Redick this morning talking about that game Friday night, and if this is a defining moment for Curry, his legacy, and his career here moving forward.
I absolutely think so. And when you look at the context of this, the Warriors essentially being out of this stage for 2 years, him not winning a Finals MVP yet, and clearly being the best player in this series, and then the context of going against this Celtics defense, which, as we know, was the number one defense in the league this season and looked so stout through three rounds of the playoffs so far. And what he's done against this defense is nothing short of remarkable. And I just want to comment on that Klay Thompson quote. which I love. And what Clay is talking about there is competitive stamina. And to me, that's what separates the greats from the all-time greats. And Steph has competitive stamina in spades.
J.J. Redick this morning talking about Steph Curry and that performance from Friday night, which really was remarkable. He was fantastic. He got a little help as well from some guys around him, and they were able to even the series on the road. That's the impressive thing. Trailing in the series, trailing at halftime, on the road. Curry, you know, banged up his ankle two nights prior, has been the guy on that team this entire series, and went out there and played like that, especially in the fourth quarter. Which takes me to the other side of the matchup, the Celtics. Right, you keep trying to force it down my throat, and I'm finally hearing some people here since Game 4 Friday night push back on this idea of Jason Tatum as some sort of superstar or top player in the league, something I've been saying for weeks, and others are starting to finally notice. Because Jason Tatum has not been good enough. In that second half of Game 4 Friday night, while Steph Curry was leading his guys back on the road while trailing with a hurt ankle, Jason Tatum on the other end had two baskets the entire second half, as the Warriors outscored the Celtics on Boston's home floor by 15 in the second half. Boston had a chance to put that series away at home Friday. Tatum disappeared. The Celtics did not play well. And this is a concern for Boston. This was one of my concerns going into this series, that this year the Celtics, in clutch moments, were the second worst performing team. What's a clutch moment? If the game is within 5 points in the final 5 minutes. They were the second worst team in the league in those situations. The Warriors were one of the best in the league. And we saw that Friday night. When the game was hanging in the balance there, late in the fourth quarter, the Celtics did nothing. They scored 6 points in the final 7.5 minutes. The Warriors pulled away with the big win Friday night. And when you look at how Boston played, that's what was so disappointing. The shot selection, the decisions on offense, and also the fact that their star kind of disappeared. Marcus Smart had a big three to put the Celtics up four with about 5 minutes to go. After that, Jalen Brown took the next two shots. Then Tatum had a miss. Then Marcus Smart took the next two shots. Then Al Horford. And then Brown. And then White. Tatum, supposedly the star, took one shot in the final 5 minutes. Instead, it was a lot of Jalen Brown. It was Marcus Smart. It was Al Horford. It was Jalen Brown again. Derek White. No Jason Tatum. One shot attempt for Tatum in the last about 6 minutes of that game, when the team needed him the most. And that's the big difference. When the Warriors needed Steph Curry, he stepped up and played huge, scoring 43 points on the road. We weren't sure, right, how healthy he was going to be. Turned out he was absolutely fine. He played the best game of his series, ironically, after suffering some sort of foot injury the game prior. And meanwhile, Tatum disappeared once again, as he has in many second halves. You can keep trying to force it down my throat about him being a superstar, but I watched that game Friday. I saw one player disappear at home, and I saw the other one come up big when his team needed him the most, putting his team on the back on the road, bum ankle, trailing in the series to get a win. And now the Warriors favored once again, heading back home in what's become a three-game series, and Golden State has home court advantage. That was the turning point, that second half of Game 4 Friday night. And that's when, as we always say, right, in these big spots, that's what creates legacy. I have my tears of clutchness. Jason Tatum has not been clutch. He disappeared. Steph Curry, meanwhile, made huge shots to will his team to a victory to even up that series. And that's the big difference. We could see the potential from Tatum. He could have some big first halves. He could put up some gaudy numbers in the press, in the box score. Not all numbers are created equally, right? Tatum will put up good numbers every night. When you watch the game, you come away not as impressed. But what defines that legacy, or how impactful a player truly is what they do in the big spots and at the end of games. Tatum disappeared. Steph Curry stepped up. And now this series is tied, heading back to Golden State. Here is J.J. Redick, and then you'll hear Vince Carter at the end of this clip as well, talking about Jason Tatum. What does he need to do tonight in Game 5 and moving forward to try to help the Celtics? He's not even the leading scorer on the Celtics this series. And they need their star player to try to help them out to win an NBA Finals. Here is Redick and Vince Carter breaking down Tatum's performance now moving forward this morning on ESPN's Get Up.
It's actually pretty simple. He just needs to make some two-pointers. He's been awful shooting two-pointers in this series. And I think some of it is taking advantage of his size. Some of it is slowing down and just making the right read. At times, mm-hmm. I think he's getting sped up and he's driving into no man's land with no real plan. You know, that graphic showed his second half numbers. How about the fourth quarter? Mm. He's 4 for 16 in the fourth quarter in this series. Just really poor play on the offensive end, shooting the basketball for him in the second half in this series.
Vince, what advice coming out of halftime does Jason need to take to actually change this momentum?
JJ said it, aggressive getting to the close to the basket, working your way inside out. You know, don't settle for those tough twos and slow down a little bit. You know, sometimes being aggressive now, setting someone else up will help you maybe two or three plays later because they've seen that play before and they know you'll make the right play. So for Jason, just be aggressive, but get close to the basket first, then work your way out to twos and to the threes. I think sometimes he settled. A couple of times we saw last game, he saw Bielitsa. He tried to take him off the dribble, plays great defense, and then settles for a tough two instead of just getting in the paint, maybe getting off the ball, because they try to help off of Bielitsa when they see that mismatch.
JJ Redick and Vince Carter breaking it down this morning. It's simple. Just make more twos. Yeah, easier said than done. But Jason Tatum is shooting 27% from inside the arc on two-pointers in this NBA Finals. 27% from a first-team All-NBA guy. Not good enough. I know he's only 24, and it's his first NBA Finals. But he's got to play much better, especially in the second half. Not even the leading scorer on the Celtics this series. And that was the big difference Friday night. Steph Curry played like a star. Jason Tatum played like he wasn't even on the floor. And the role players for Golden State made bigger plays than the role players for Boston. And they won a big game on the road. Now we have Game 5 tonight. And again, the numbers suggest, right, whoever wins Game 5 in a series tied at 2-2, they win something like 71% of the time. We also heard those numbers about the Celtics after winning Game 1 and winning Game 3, and yet the Warriors right now are still favored in the series. But tonight is, of course, a huge swing game. Game 5 of a 2-2 series. I am very intrigued by tonight's game. I'd like to think that Golden State, going back home after the way they played Friday, that they'll be able to take the lead tonight. But the Celtics have not lost back-to-back games in the postseason. They've done it just once in the last 5 months. And they've been better on the road than at home. We saw that in Game 1 of this series when they already won at Golden State. So my heart, I guess, would be telling me the Warriors, it feels like the Warriors come back home tonight, play well as they did the other night, and win this game to take the lead in the series at home. But then my head says, well, hold on. The Celtics always play so well after a loss. If you look at the Celtics following wins, their average turnovers would be about the highest in the league. Following losses, their average number of turnovers would be about the lowest in the league. It's a very odd trend. They're a young team. They're inconsistent. And maybe they just need a little urgency or that pressure, that chip on their shoulder to go out there and play well following losses. But the Celtics have been so good after a loss the second half of the season and especially in the postseason. I would like to think the Warriors could win at home tonight, but it's still hard to doubt Boston coming off a loss because we haven't seen them play back-to-back bad games in a very long time. I don't know if they'll do it tonight. But in order for the Celtics to get a win on the road, Tatum's going to have to play a lot better than he did in Game 4. I don't know if you'll be able to slow down Curry, right? It's the old cliche, you can't stop him, you can only hope to contain him. I don't know if you can even contain him right now. He's shooting 50% on threes this series. He's averaging 34 points. He's been remarkable. But Tatum's going to have to play big, and those role players, of course, will have to step up on the road for Boston tonight. Game 4 was a lot of fun. I hope Game 5 tonight is the same thing. And what a huge game it is in the NBA Finals. I'd like to think the Warriors can win at home, but it's hard to expect the Celtics to have back-to-back bad performances, something they haven't done in months. We'll see what happens tonight. And we'll continue to break it down throughout the afternoon. We'll get to Paul Feinbaum's comments about Clemson. He continues to go after Dabo and the Clemson Tigers. When we come back, the Charlotte Hornets have hired their new coach. I like the move. And also, there's something connecting all of the hires, the new hires in the NBA this offseason. And we have seen this in football as well. Now we're seeing it in basketball. And we'll get to that next. More Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers. Lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Tell me, did you think it'd be all right? If I could just crash here tonight. You can see I'm no shape for driving. And anyway, I've got no place to go. It's an old man.
Coming up, The Hornets have their new head coach. I like the decision made by Charlotte, and it also shares something in common with some of the other moves we're seeing. We'll get to that here on the Mora Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Hey, I filled in for the Charleston Battery Saturday night.
That's right. That's right. How'd it go?
It wasn't bad.
Okay.
It went well enough. I don't know. See, I've never done soccer before for PA. I used to I broadcasted soccer play-by-play way back when, but you knew, or I felt I knew how to handle that. For PA, like, I don't know. I don't know how the normal guy does it. Everybody should, you know, do it your own way, whatever. Be your own voice.
Be unique.
Yeah. But I don't know, like, I assume they go pretty crazy, like, if a goal scored. I didn't go too crazy. I didn't do no, like, on the broadcast when you're watching it on TV.
Oh, yeah, like a Spanish broadcast where you go goal for 15 seconds.
Yeah. I didn't do anything like that.
No, you should have. That would have been sweet.
It would have been fun.
And the accent, come on now.
And then, like, there's also a situation where whenever there was an injury, we'd have to do a read, and it was for a sponsor. And, you know, in soccer, a lot of times guys fall down, and then you have to go out there, and they check on them, everything okay, or they take a little while to get up. People may call it flopping. I did not. And there's a read. And so, like, I was curious, like, you know, it is an injury. So it's like when you watch the news and they report bad news, they always say it, like, in a monotone voice.
Right.
But I am also reading something for a sponsor. So I think the sponsor wants to make sure that, you know, so that was a luck. Like, I don't know how to handle this. How do we handle? And then a lot of times, like I said, people think that they're just, like, flopping anyway. So do we take these things really serious? Or
right.
So anyways, I don't know. But point being, the whole reason why I bring this up is because I've always said whenever we have, like, certain teams on the Morrow Midday Show, they usually go on and have good luck or success. So we're pretty good luck around here for the teams. The Battery won their first game of the season.
Whoa.
Then they did not win any of their next 12 matches.
Right.
Until Saturday.
What?
You know what the score was Saturday night?
What was it?
3-0 they won.
Are you kidding me?
Their best match of the best game of the year.
Luke Morrow in
That's
attendance,
right.
Folks.
Yep.
I mean, this is a cry to all teams out there. If they want to win, you bring Luke Morrow in the building, folks.
That's right. We used to have somebody from the Stingrays on every week about 2 years ago. That was the year they made it to the championship.
Well.
And then the Battery had a good year last year when we were bringing guys on every week. This year, not so much, but I guess I had to be in attendance. We had an eight-man football team on. They've won the state title back-to-back years after we've had the coach on. Tell you, we're good luck around here.
Oh, yeah.
So if you have a losing streak that you need to beat, give us a call, and for a small fee, I could come out to the game and provide you with good luck.
Yeah, we'll negotiate those fees, Luke. Yeah, we can heighten these prices if you're bringing true, honest luck to these folks,
right.
Like Blue of Earth. I mean, you know, you're basically kind of witchcraft here.
Exactly. That's right. Yeah. They hadn't won a game since March 12th, first game of the year. I show up, boom, 3-0, best game of the year. So I think I should take all of the credit. Forget the guys that actually scored the goals and played the game Saturday night. I think it was all me.
Now, I know the Battery has Froze's out there,
yes.
You know, hot and ready, or cold and ready, excuse me. Did you get any after the game? Did you get a Froze?
I did not. In fact, I couldn't make it over that way. If I had walked past that stand, maybe I would have been tempted. I was hoping that maybe I could still get one of those pizzas they got, the pizza place they have out there. But the way it works is they block off that portion of the stadium so that the players can make their way off the field into the locker room. And this is a credit to the Battery and the players. The players are so great with the fans that they were out there taking pictures, signing autographs, talking to the kids for a long time, which is exactly what they should do and is exactly what, you know, it's all about. But then it was blocked off for so long, I waited for a while so that I could get over to that area. And then maybe I would have walked by the front. I don't know if they were still open once the game ended. I don't know, but I would have walked right past them, and maybe I would have grabbed one for the road on a nice warm night after a hard night of work.
Absolutely.
But I said, I can't wait any longer, so I went out the other way and walked to the car. So no froses. I had to keep it professional. Although I tell you what, that would have helped me loosen up for that goal call.
Yeah, exactly.
A little
frosé
in the booth. but no, we kept it professional Saturday night. It was all good. It was great. Love the people over there at the Battery. Glad they played well and got a win. And it was fun to be there.
Great folks. Great folks.
Yeah, they do a good job over there. So if you haven't been yet this summer, go check out a game. They're back home in a couple of weeks. And I appreciate it. I don't know if they'll ever invite me back at the PA booth. I don't know. Hopefully I didn't screw it up too bad. You know, I did have a couple of slip-ups, though.
Oh.
And I'm very, not even competitive is the word, right? Because this isn't like a competitive role. But got very upset with myself. I tripped over a word or two a couple of times.
Okay. So it was just it wasn't a name or anything that you got incorrect?
I think I got all the names right.
Okay, cool.
As far as I know.
That's a big thing in soccer, right? That's like doing a hockey broadcast. You got to know, like, all these names, got to know the pronunciation, and obviously you being a professional, you probably did your due diligence.
Yeah, and there, of course, soccer, international players, there are some tough names.
Yeah.
So I think I got them all right, I think.
Tweet us if Luke got any wrong.
Yeah, if you were there Saturday and you said, who is this annoying guy that keeps talking over the speakers? Let me know. But yeah, it was fun. It was a good night. And it was great that the battery got a win. For some reason, USL, the league that they're in, maybe because I'm not used to saying it so much, it's like obviously the NFL is part of our vernacular, it just rolls off your tongue. That was a tough one. And I really had to enunciate and say it like I just did. USL. Like I had to say it really slowly.
Okay.
I tripped up over that when I tried to rip right through USL.
Because you're not used to saying it all the time. You know, that's probably why.
Yeah,
one
I guess. There's something about the combination of those letters for some reason. It's a tongue twister for me. USL. I could say it now, but I don't know. Saturday night, that one was giving me a hard time. For
Think
sure.
about if you were on a USFL broadcast. That's probably more difficult.
Yeah. So anyways, it was a lot of fun. That was good. I'm glad the battery won, and it was a beautiful Saturday night. Hopefully you were there and enjoyed some soccer. Hey, the Hornets hired their new coach, Kenny Atkinson. Is picked over Mike D'Antoni. I like the hire and the decision. I think Kenny Atkinson, as I said last week on the show, is a better fit for what the Hornets are trying to build. And he's somebody that can try to build them up. That's what he does. Now, when he was fired at Brooklyn, the only other time he was a head coach, he was fired just 2 years ago. And, of course, remember, that was the whole Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant coming in, thinking they don't need a head coach. Kyrie did that interview before he even played a game that said, like, we don't need a head coach. Right? Me and Kevin, we can run the team. So, you know, when you look at Atkinson and the way things ended in Brooklyn, I don't know if that's as big of an indictment on him as it was just the situation he was then put into with some of those guys coming in. And the Hornets do not have those type of star players. See, Atkinson's background was with the Hawks and Budenholzer, and the idea of Budenholzer, right, similar. Now you have Giannis, who's a star now, but Giannis seems to be a very, I guess you would say, humble star. He's not a Kyrie Irving. Or even like, Penny Hardaway got coaches fired, Magic got coaches fired. I don't know if Giannis would be that type of guy. And it's more about the culture, and it's about the team, and we're all in this together. And Giannis is the perfect star for Milwaukee. So that's the background of Kenny Atkinson. Then he goes to Brooklyn, and early on, right, the reason why they hired him was because they didn't have that star player. Then they wind up with Kyrie and Durant. Things don't go well. So the concerns are, you know, can Atkinson, can he coach a star? Well, the Hornets don't really have one just yet. Maybe you hope Ball will get to that point. Maybe he has the makings because of his father and what we know about the Ball family that he could become somebody like a Kyrie Irving who's tough to deal with from a coaching perspective as he continues to get better in this league. I don't know. But I think Atkinson is a good move and a good hire to try to build this Hornets team to where they're going because they're not quite there yet. We saw that. Right? They got to the play-in round and they got embarrassed. So they're knocking on the door of being a playoff team. They're a young team. I think Atkinson's a good hire to come in. He fits that group. And he could try to build this organization. I think they need a big guy in the draft. Maybe you try to spend some money this offseason. Go try to get an Ayton. I don't know. But I think you need to add some size. And now they got the coach. And we'll see what the Hornets can do moving forward. But here's what I find interesting. And we see this all the time. I think it's, honestly, despite liking this hire, I think we see a lot of lazy hiring practices in the sports world. We have seen it in recent years in the NFL with Sean McVay. And it's nothing new. We saw it with Bill Belichick's assistants. College football, Saban's assistants get hired all the time. When somebody is successful, you can't hire that guy. So you figure the next best thing are the guys around them. And so after Sean McVay's immediate impact with the Rams, right now you've had like a Kingsbury, a Zach Taylor, Kevin O'Connell, Mike McDaniel, all these guys throughout the NFL hired from the Sean McVay coaching tree or at least seen to be something similar to a Sean McVay, which is essentially a young offensive coach, and they all happen to be like good-looking guys as well. Apparently, that doesn't hurt either. And in the NBA, three coaches have been hired this offseason. Kenny Atkinson, just hired in Charlotte. Darvin Ham, hired by the Lakers. Both come from the Mike Budenholzer tree, who, of course, won the NBA Finals with the Bucks last year. And he stems from the Greg Popovich coaching tree, which has been a popular tree, right? People want to replicate what the Spurs have accomplished. Budenholzer is doing that a little bit in Milwaukee. And so now other teams are trying to pluck away from Mike Budenholzer and guys who have been close to him to try to duplicate what he has done. Kenny Atkinson, Darvin Ham this offseason. And the third coach hired this offseason is Mike Brown, who's also coming from the Golden State Warriors. which is where Kenny Atkinson currently is. So the Warriors are going to lose two of their assistants here after the finals. But we see this all the time. It's nothing new, but I always see it as somewhat lazy. Right? The Warriors are the best dynasty we've had in a while. So when the Kings have to go make a hire, they go take Mike Brown, an assistant from that team. The Lakers and the Hornets are looking for head coaches. Well, the Bucks did just win a championship a year ago. Darvin Ham, right, coached with Budenholzer. Let's get him. Kenny Atkinson coached with Budenholzer and then now is coaching with the Golden State Warriors. They're in the NBA Finals. We should go hire him. And sometimes it works, of course. Sometimes it doesn't. But we always see teams do this where they just go look at the best team and try to take their assistants and hope that, well, they must, you know, they must have the secret recipe. They know the key being an assistant on a good team. And sometimes you can't hire a Budenholzer or Steve Kerr. You think the next best thing is the guy sitting next to them on the bench. That's not always the case. But I do like the Kenny Atkinson hire. Lastly, it is somewhat interesting, though, that he is replacing James Borrego, who is also a Spurs guy, a Greg Popovich assistant. So you're replacing Borrego, who comes from the same coaching background as Kenny Atkinson. So you already had somebody from that Popovich, Budenholzer bloodline, if you will, and now you're just getting another in Kenny Atkinson. We'll see if this one works out better for the Hornets. But I do like that move. I also find it interesting when you look at the hiring this offseason, and I guess it's nothing new in sports, but the three coaches getting hired in the NBA this offseason coming from the two best teams in recent years. It's usually how it works, but there's not a lot of originality in some of these decisions. You just look at the best teams in the league, and we'll just get their assistant. We can't get their head coach, so we'll get their assistants instead. And that's what's going on. And we'll see if it works for the Hornets with Atkinson. When we come back, Paul Feinbaum continues to take shots at Dabo Sweeney and Clemson. We'll get to that next. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
There's a girl in this harbor town and she works laying whiskey down. They say brandy, fetch another round. She serves them whiskey and wine. The sailors say, Brandy, you're a fine girl.
You're a fine
what
girl.
A good wife you would be.
Such a fine girl.
Yeah, your eyes could steal a sailor from the sea.
Coming up, Paul Feinbaum continues to go after Clemson. Does he have a point? We'll get to that here in the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio in just a moment. They have a heat advisory in effect today till 7 p.m. Feel like temperature could get up to 107 in certain parts. Feel like temperature yesterday was about 98. Summer is here. And Trent decided to go golfing with long pants on yesterday in that heat. Old move.
And a dark shirt. You know, it wasn't ideal, Luke. But, hey, sometimes you got to brave the conditions. And that's what makes you a better golfer
if
you do so. If you go out there, you sweat, you grind. Right. It just makes you better.
That's true. Fair point. You'll be better for moving forward from yesterday.
Even though it was by far my worst round I've ever played. Like, there's no doubt about it.
Well, better long-term effects.
Yeah, exactly.
Down the road. The heat is always overrated. Look, heat's better than the cold, but there's that happy medium. Right? You don't want it to be too hot because then what do? You sit inside in the air conditioning anyways and then hope it cools off by night anyways.
We're under a heat advisory today. I mean, what are we doing until 7 p.m.? It's crazy.
It's true. I know. I'll be staying inside. Paul Feinbaum, I read the clips last week from his own show last week when he was upset with a list put together, as you know, the Dan Patrick Show calls it list season this time of year. Everyone does their list and it's easy fodder, and the Dan Patrick Show has fun with the idea of all these lists. Bill Bender had put out a list for the top coaches in college football, and he was on the Feinbaum Show and they were debating if Dabo should be number two ahead of Kirby Smart for best coaches in college football. So we talked about it last week on the show. Then Feinbaum went on a radio show in Alabama and continued this conversation. This is a bit of a long clip, but it's a lengthy rant from Feinbaum going after Clemson. Here's what Paul had to say Friday on Alabama radio talking about Dabo, Clemson, and even the fan base. Here's everything Feinbaum had to say about Clemson.
Well, we're taking a stroll down memory lane. Speaking of yesterday's news, Clemson's Dabo Sweeney, apparently.
Well, this happened, and you understand the context, so I'm not going to bore your audience. I was talking to a writer who had Dabo number two in the sporting news list, and I started arguing with him. I said, "How can you have Kirby Smart number three?" And he said, "Well, Dabo's won two out of the last." I said, "Dabo's yesterday's news," and I will tell you, Mark. I always kind of vacillate sometimes, but there is no doubt after reading social media yesterday that the most insecure, paranoid fan base of college football in America is Clemson. The Clemsonites, take that to a whole new level, and I don't know. You know, it's one thing if you've never won a national championship. It's another thing if you haven't won one since 1988, like Notre Dame or Michigan, that has won a grand total of 1.5 national championships in 70 years. But these guys have won two in recent years, and they are just so desperate for attention. They're so desperate for adulation. They're so desperate to be loved, and they play in a league that speaks for itself. I don't need to waste your audience's time on the ACC. I've already talked about where that league is going, and Dabo Swinney's not the second best coach in the country, not at all. I said he's yesterday's news because look at his staff. A couple of years ago, one of his offensive coordinators went down to Florida to be a head coach. This year, where did Venables left to go to Oklahoma? Another one left to become a head coach. His number one, inside man, Thad Turnipseed, went to Oklahoma. So did other people. And he gambled on himself. That's what everyone says. And this program is going to be highly regarded this year because they have a really easy schedule, as always. But I don't think Dabo Swinney's, when you talk about the top coaches in the country anymore, if you're objective, if you're looking at today, looking ahead, after you talk about Saban, it's Kirby, it's Ryan Day, it's Mario Cristobal, it's Jimbo Fisher. To me, Dabo is living off of Deshaun Watson and Trevor Lawrence, and we saw what a mess he made out of the next great quarterback last year. So, I just laugh at Clemson fans and get over yourself, okay? You're not that important. You're really not that. This is 2022. College football has left you behind.
A lot of things said there from Feinbaum. I'm still taking notes on all the things he said. A lot of comments about Feinbaum going after Clemson, going after Dabo, going after the fan base, the ACC. Let's break this down piece by piece. First, in regards to Clemson fans, calling them, quote, most insecure, paranoid fan base in college football, and later saying that Clemson fans are so desperate for attention. Now, some things Feinbaum said in that three-minute rant I don't agree with. Some things he said in that three-minute rant I do agree with. And there is something about the Clemson fan base that people always discuss or talk about how they are, I guess you could say, sensitive. People refer to the Clemson fan base as even acting like some sort of cult. And I don't know if it's the fact that Clemson fans would feel underappreciated because they're like the new kids on the block and maybe feel like they don't get the same respect as an Alabama or maybe even a Georgia, certainly from a Feinbaum, or even Ohio State or some of the more historic programs, historically relevant programs in college football. I don't know if it's because the concern of the fact that maybe some view the success as being fleeting for Clemson and the concern about that and what the future may hold. Or sometimes maybe it's just simply that you never change where you came from. And you probably know that friend. In fact, we talked about this a little bit when LeBron James became a billionaire and Dwayne Wade still said he's the cheapest guy in the NBA. Right, because you may know somebody who came up, who was raised through humble beginnings, tough childhood, and then they did well for themselves as an adult, came into some money, but they're still very careful with their money. And you think, like, what? You got all the money in the world. But they still think back to how they were raised or what they came up with or are just concerned about returning to that point. Or even like a great athlete Michael Jordan gets cut from his whatever it was freshman team, still carries that chip on his shoulders to the point that he invites the coach that cut him to his Hall of Fame induction all those years ago, all those years later, just to further get back at him. Chip on the shoulder of Tom Brady for being drafted in the fifth round 20 years ago. That guys don't, athletes, even just people, us humans, it may be hard to forget where you came from or ever change how you were raised or brought up or how you once were. And so similar with Clemson, that at one point they weren't winning these national championships. And now that they are winning national championships, or at least were, and competing at the highest level of the sport, it's that other phrase that people always say about, new money. You don't know how to act. But I do agree with at least to a certain degree, maybe I wouldn't be so harsh as Feinbaum, but that the Clemson fan base is very sensitive. If you want to say insecure, sure, that's another term for it. And they do not like any pushback on their program, their coach, their fans, at least certainly not as much as other fan bases. In regards to the ACC, this is a common complaint, right? They play in the ACC. They can't compare to a Georgia and Alabama, the SEC. I've always acknowledged that the ACC, of course, is not as good of a conference as the SEC. But it's hard to continue to put down Clemson and put them with the rest of the ACC teams when they were so dominant in the ACC. And when they went to go win their national championships, it's not like they only went through the ACC to do so. They beat Nick Saban. So I never got this argument. Do they have an easier path to get to the playoff? Yeah, sure, maybe. But then they still have to beat a Georgia or an Alabama or whatever other top teams you want to throw at them. And they were able to, and they won the national championships. They beat Saban twice in a big game. How often has Kirby Smart done that? He finally did it for the first time this past year, but that's what was holding him back. And it's the classic, like you always have that buddy that says he makes up some sort of excuse for why maybe you were more successful. And the best comparison I could think of off the top of my head would be something so silly, I imagine you'd never be in this situation. But if somebody was saying, like, the only reason why you got better grades in high school was because you went to an easier high school, and now you're at the same college together, and you're getting better grades with him, or better grades than him at that same school. It's like, okay, now what can you say for yourself? Which isn't the perfect example, but it's similar in the sense that SEC fans always put, well, they play ACC teams. It's so much easier. Okay, and then they went and they beat Alabama on a level playing field, the best team that you have from your conference. So now what are the excuses? So while the ACC is certainly an easier path, an easier schedule, an easier conference than the SEC, you can't write off Clemson's success because, well, they don't play in the SEC. They've beaten plenty of SEC teams along the way. Other things that stood out. As he said yesterday, right, Dabo's yesterday's news. He very well may be. We'll see as we move forward in college football. But isn't that the whole basis of this ranking? Is what they have done yesterday, right, in years past? Isn't that the idea of when you're ranking the best coaches in college football? I think we usually do it off the resumes and what they've accomplished, which would be, by definition, I guess, right, yesterday's news. What do they do in the past? When we talk about the best coaches in college football, it's not usually some sort of a predictor. You don't put somebody who's just been hired in the top five and think, like, I think he's going to be a top five coach, right? Feinbaum said he's lost his staff. Well, we kind of have to see him coach without said staff before we completely write him off. And you can't erase all of the accomplishments from the past based off of your belief of what the future holds, which is just simply a belief. Feinbaum thinks Clemson's falling behind, the sport's passing them by, that they will become yesterday's news. But we don't know that for sure, so it's hard to make that determination right now today. It's like Bill Belichick, right? The Patriots may not be as good the rest of Belichick's career. Does that suddenly undo the success he had in the past because they're not quite as good as they once were? Do you say, oh, well, you know what? Actually, this Belichick guy, he's not one of the best coaches in the NFL. No, I think Bill Belichick is the greatest coach we've ever had in the NFL, even if he won't be as successful moving forward or even win another Super Bowl. So same with Dabo, that even if you think Clemson's done winning national championships, what he's already accomplished is enough on the resume to put him still in that conversation of top coaches. When you want to talk about looking ahead, right, as he said, it's about Saban, it's about Kirby, it's about Day, it's about Mario Cristobal in the ACC. That's interesting. Maybe more about Mario in the ACC than Dabo right now. And then also Jimbo Fisher was thrown in there. I would cool it on the Jimbo talk. He has to prove something. I know he's won a national championship before, But you got to prove me something at Texas A&M first before I say the future of college football is Jimbo Fisher and Texas A&M. And lastly, the last things that he said at the end, number one, college football is leaving you behind. Maybe we'll see. This is what I've talked about with the transfer portal and some of these other things that Clemson may not be as big on. We'll find out. We don't know that yet. We may assume that, but we can't base that in fact just yet when it comes to these comparisons. And the last thing, Feinbaum said, right, Clemson fans, you're not that important. Clemson was at the top of the sport, winning national championships there for a period. We'll see if they get back to that point, maybe as soon as this year, competing for a national title. But I do think it's true that if you were picking the top teams in college football, if you did some sort of super conference, you would like to include Clemson, assuming that they're competing at the highest level. But yeah, for a long time, they weren't competing at the highest level, and college football was just fine. So I do agree they're not on the same level as a USC, a Michigan, an Ohio State, an Alabama. They only are when they are competing for national championships. We'll wrap up Hour 1 next. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Wrapping up Hour 1 of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Talking about Feinbaum ranting against Clemson and Dabo Swinney last segment. Obviously, we know Feinbaum, right, is an SEC guy. And the next time he says something nice about somebody outside of the SEC will probably be the first. But when it comes to these rankings, the whole idea is based off of in the past. Like, my Minnesota Vikings just hired Kevin O'Connell. I'm optimistic about it. But I can't say, hey, the league, it's an offensive league now. O'Connell's an offensive guy. It comes from Sean McVay. I think right, the game is moving in his direction. It's passing these defensive coaches by. I think Kevin O'Connell is a top five coach. When we do these lists, it would sound ridiculous to try to base it off the future. I think Mike McDaniel is already a top five coach in the NFL because I think he's going to do great things in Miami. You may be right, but we already have the resumes of these other coaches who have shown they could be successful. Now, look, Kirby Smart just won a national championship. He has shown he could be successful. That's the debate between Kirby and Dabo. But my point being, you can't base these lists off of what you believe is going to happen in the future. How can we do that to rank best coaches? That's a separate kind of list. You can only go off of what they've accomplished, and I think Dabo still is number two. 8 months from now, that may change if they have another down year. But right now, I think he's still number two. Hey, we'll talk baseball, we'll talk some movies with Adnan Virk when we come back. Hour 2 next. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.